Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, presented by Sunnet.
Touchdown, Jacksonville!
Jacksonville!
Jaguars Monday is brought to you by Baptist Health, Carey Limousine, Community First Credit Union, Ticket Exchange, Wachovia, Sunny's Barbecue, and by Everbank.
Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith
begins right now.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. I am not Cole Pepper. I'm Joe Fortunato. Cole's out tonight. So is Gene Smith. But that does not mean we've got any kind of B team in there tonight. Oh, no, 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 no.
Yeah, this is going to be a wild hour.
The senior editor of Jaguars.com, that's Vic Ketchman. Also in here, we have our director of player personnel, Terry McDonough. Terry, thank you for coming in tonight.
And,
say that again.
I said third time. It's the third time I've pinch hit for Gene. So.
Yeah, there's a good chance with the two of us doing this show, you might want to lock that door because GM Gene could end up having, he could be listening to this and have to start pounding on the door. Get McDonough off the air. Shut Ketchman up.
I trust everybody had a good bye week.
Oh, yeah. It was great. I spent the weekend painting.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. How about you, Terry? Did you have a nice weekend?
Yeah, I had a great time. I actually went up to the I took my daughter to the South Carolina-Arkansas game, went to the Citadel in Charleston, which is a beautiful city, and then drove home listening to football. First time all year I haven't watched football. I listened to football, and that's serious, and got all the games, went back and forth.
What year is Mount?
Junior.
So I can't ask you questions about him?
No. Who does he play for?
He played for the team that you saw Saturday night.
Oh, if he wasn't a senior, I wasn't looking at him.
Yeah. Well, right, I'll tell Joe? You what, there's no rule prohibiting me from talking about underclass quarterbacks. I'll tell you what, I'll give you my impression.
Okay.
And then, you know, I mean, if you think I'm off, chime in.
Sure.
I saw him last year in the Liberty Bowl, and I thought he was a train wreck. I thought he was a screw-up after screw-up after screw-up. A talent, no question, but a lot of mistakes, a lot of throwing it into coverage, et cetera. Saw him against Alabama early this year. Looked a lot better, but it concerned me that there was a collapse. He collapsed in the fourth quarter. Then the guy I saw Saturday against South Carolina was eye-popping. He made my jaw drop. I think that's the guy. I know everyone is hot on the other or one of the other underclass quarterbacks, Andrew Luck, and he certainly is a thoroughbred. But Ryan Mallett, I mean, that is a big man with a great arm and a wonderfully smooth delivery who it now appears as though Bobby Petrino is teaching him how. It's what he's teaching him is sinking in. It looks like he's learning to become a pro-style quarterback with the efficiency that you would expect of a high pick, a pro-style quarterback. I was really, really impressed in Ryan Mallett. I don't know where he fits, where he'll fit in the top 10, because he'll certainly be a top 10 guy. And I don't know if he'll last for the Jaguars, but if he did, I'd have to believe he'd be on the top of your board. Now, that's me speaking, not you guys.
Yeah, well, I was down on the field pregame looking at all the seniors for both teams, mm-hmm. and you couldn't help but notice how big he was. I mean, he's a big man.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he throws, well, he had a great night. I mean, he dominated the game.
Is there a quarterback in college football that throws the ball better than him?
That I've seen actually throws it, just throw it, pure throwing?
Yeah, I mean, throws it with better velocity, velocity, accuracy?
Probably not.
Well, he really impressed me Saturday night against a pretty good South Carolina defense. You know, they were stout against Alabama. They were stout against Georgia. I was very, very impressed. Anyhow, we got more present tense things to talk about tonight. And, of course, we go right away. This is a week that is going to culminate in a game of tremendous importance for the Jaguars Sunday against the Houston Texans. Both teams are 4-4. This is sayonara-ville for the team that loses on Sunday. That's my opinion. But if you leave Sunday's game 5-4, one of these teams is going to leave Sunday's game 5-4, and they're going to be in it. I mean, this is head-to-head stuff, and you've got the Colts and the Titans ahead of you. If you leave here 4-5 on Sunday, you know, I think you're playing for something other than the division title. I don't know what you're playing for, wild card or respectability or whatever. But if you plan on chasing the division title, this is it, and it's it for both teams. By the way, Houston may have the most difficult second half of the season schedule in the NFL. Terry, listen to this schedule. After they play here on Sunday, they play at the Jets, Tennessee, at the Eagles, Baltimore, at the Titans, at Denver, and then Jacksonville at home. Just the next, after Jacksonville, just the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games. Jets, Titans, Eagles, Ravens, Titans. I mean, that's more than a minefield. That's a death march. So, I mean, they clearly for them, if they have any playoff aspirations or any playoff hopes at all, they have to win on Sunday.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. I obviously listening to the games and trying to figure out different scenarios. When you predicted it, by the way, I'll give you that.
I called it.
Yeah, Indianapolis and Houston losing makes things mm-hmm. a little more interesting for everybody.
This thing is wide open. You got a 5-3 team in second place. That's Indianapolis. And what are the Titans? 5-3?
I think you have 5-3, 5-3, 4-4, 4-4.
Exactly. So I mean, you know, you got one game separating four teams. It's the two levels of the division. So I mean, this is it. This is crunch time, and it begins right now. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but since Indianapolis will host Cincinnati on Sunday, I think that's going to be a layup for the Colts, especially coming off a Monday night game for Cincinnati. And Tennessee, I'm sorry, Joe, maybe you can find out.
I think they're at Miami.
They are. They are at Miami on Sunday. That's going to be a tough one for
the Titans.
Miami's
fighting for their.
Yes, sir. So this thing could get even closer. You could, if the Jaguars win on Sunday, it's very possible they could find themselves tied for second place with maybe Tennessee. And a game behind Indianapolis. And, of course, the Jaguars have already beaten the Colts, so that's a big one.
You know, who knows what's going to happen, but a year ago, we were probably at this time or a little bit later when we made our run, we were thinking wild card only. You know, I think Indy ran away with it. But this time, now this year, you look at it and you say, okay, you know, you have Pittsburgh and Baltimore. You have New England and the Jets won yesterday. I thought Detroit might. You know, those might be the two division winners and the two wild cards right there if they keep going. Those four between the two of them, you know. So the division, if Indy can come back to the pack, might be more realistic.
If you would like to ask Terry a question, submit it please to facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars.
Very good, Victor.
Is that right?
That is correct.
Send it there, and if it's a question that's going to lend itself to the show, I will advance it to Terry McDonough. And I'll begin the inquisition, the interrogation, same thing, with this question, Terry. Is this year's team better than last year's?
Yes.
Why? How is it better?
I think, first of all, the defensive front with Campman, Knighton, and Alualu. I mean, I think since, you know, when Big John and Marcus were in their prime, back when they were both young, that was a formidable defensive front. But these three up front on defense put a lot of pressure on opposing teams. And you're starting to see that the last few weeks with Knighton and Alualu emerging. David's been playing well. The two receivers offensively were scoring a lot of points. We're in rhythm offensively. Mike Sims-Walker and obviously Mercedes and Mike Thomas were scoring more points. I don't have the official stats, but offensively I like our team. As much as over the last 6 or 7 years, you can help me with this one. I don't know how we're doing, statistically speaking, but I think we're in a good place offensively. And continuity with Cox coming back, playing well the last couple of weeks, and Courtney Green and Don Carey settling in as our safeties, I think we'll have the defensive backfield together as one unit, which we haven't had all year. So I think things are starting to come together. We have a lot of young talent on this team. There's not a lot of places where you can attack us and say go after us. And people will say, okay, the defensive secondary, well, that's getting better. So I'm hopeful the second half of the season that they'll kind of blend together and, we'll see the fruits of our labor back there.
The numbers aren't great. Jaguars are 23rd on offense overall, 8th in rushing, that's good, and 27th in passing. They are 28th overall on defense, 22nd against the run, and 28th against the pass. And clearly, it's the defensive side of the ball where improvement is absolutely necessary, especially against a team like Houston, which is, by the way, 5th in overall offense, 6th in rushing, 11th in passing. These guys can light you up if you have a bad day on defense. And by the way, you know, the Jaguars are heading into a stretch of schedule here that's going to, over the next month, it's going to include trips to the Giants and to the Titans. So if you're going to play better defense, you better start playing it now.
Well, I guess, you know, people might look at my argument and say, what's this guy talking about? But last year, help me out, we had 14 sacks.
Right.
And we have 14 sacks halfway through this year. So right there, we're better. Pressuring the quarterback.
And last year, I wrote this, I know, last week, the Jaguars hit the 30-point mark 3 times in the whole season. They've done that already 3 times this season. So, you know, in a half a year, the Jaguars have done in at least 2 important categories what took them all season to do last year.
You know, the 4 games we've won, we've been really good, and the 4 games we lost, we haven't been. So okay. It's right down the middle.
Yeah. Let's get our first break in, Joe.
Yeah, we'll get you out of here. Yeah. We'll be back with Jaguars Monday with Terry McDonough, Vic Ketchman. Visit Sports Mania for your chance to win the ultimate Jaguars game day experience. It's a limo ride, club seat, and Sky Lounge tailgate party passes for the Jaguars-Texans game this week. Register for free at your closest Sports Mania right here in Jacksonville. Also, flex packs are now available. Select any 3 of the remaining home games and build your own 3-game mini-season ticket. Flex packs start at just $45 per game. Call 633-2000 or visit Jaguars.com to create your own flex pack. Today, Jaguars Monday rolls on right after this on WOKV. Well, fans, you can test drive the new 2011 Ford Super Duty, the 2011 Ford Mustang, or the all-new Ford Fiesta, only at your local Southern Ford dealers. Now, we've got an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville's Circle of Care. Victor, any injuries to speak of?
Last week, Jack Del Rio said, I think it was on Wednesday, to reporters, and I quote, we're in good shape.
Good.
Yeah, this team is healthy. It's playing at probably its highest level of the season. Would you agree, Terry?
Yes, I would agree.
It is rested, and which means it's going to be thoroughly prepared for what should be the game of the season to date. I mean, this one against Houston, you know, long an antagonist of the Jaguars. This is, everything's on the line. I don't think that's an exaggeration.
I don't either. I think you're going to find 2 teams that are fighting for, you know, to stay relevant in the playoff hunt. I mean,
what do you think of Houston? They've lost 3 of their last 4 games after winning 3 of their first 4.
I think they scare you offensively, obviously, with the quarterback, the way the running back's playing, Arian Foster, and obviously they have the great receiver. And you know, defensively, they have a lot of talent. You know, they win it. I saw them opening day when they played Indianapolis. I said, oh, okay, this is the Houston everybody's been talking about. And they're a talented team. When their quarterback gets hot, like our quarterback, they're tough to deal with.
Arian Foster is sitting on 864 yards rushing, 9 touchdowns, and a 5.5 yards per carry average. Is he the surprise player of the year? Has to be, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, has to be. But he was talented coming out of the University of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. He was big, he was athletic, he ran well for them. He had some stuff off the field that was well documented. That's the only reason why a guy coming out of the SEC with that kind of size, speed, production, hands goes undrafted. He had some other issues, and he had an opportunity. This wasn't even his first team, correct? Wasn't he? They got him undrafted.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got him undrafted, and I don't think last year he didn't play much or was hurt, and this year they gave him a chance, and he's off and running. He's playing well.
And by the way, he has 32 receptions, second on the team with 32 receptions, 315 yards, 9.8 per catch, and a touchdown. He's got a long catch of 50 yards in there. I mean, this guy's having an MVP kind of season.
He's a heck of a player, and he can do it in all the phases, and you know, we'll have to stop him this weekend.
Matt Schaub is sitting on an 88.0 passer rating, and, you know, I think he's been victimized on a couple occasions by his receivers, most recently and notably by Andre Johnson yesterday, who, as the Texans were in the process of driving for what I thought would be the game winner, dropped, not only dropped a pass right in his hands over the middle that would have gained a first down in significant yardage, but then tipped it into the air and into the hands of a Chargers defensive back, which sealed the victory for the Chargers. Andre Johnson is a fantastic player, fantastic receiver. But you know what? It's what I said on the Wednesday show. I said to Brian, Joe, I said, you know, there's the defining moment is lacking from his resume. And when a guy plays as long as he has, that starts to bother me. Then you get a little bit of, you know, you get too much Art Monk in there.
And dropping that ball at the end of the
game. A lot of catch, right. You know, you have to make big plays, and I mean game winning plays, not just big plays that feed your stats. They have to be plays that win for your team. Is he the guy you fear the most?
Yes, all the way back to the University of Miami when he was playing there, he was sensational. And over the last 5 or 6 years, you know, people talk about him and Larry Fitzgerald, who's the best receiver in the NFL, but this guy can score at any time. He's almost like Chris Johnson.
Yeah.
Those guys, you put the ball in there, and at any time they can take it the distance because they're so big and they're so fast. I was listening to that game, you know, flicking around Sirius yesterday and obviously rooting against them. Mm-hmm. And a couple times they had the ball deep, and I think it was 3rd and 1 listening to it, and they had a chance to score touchdowns, and they settled for field goals and kind of kept San Diego in the game early. And you figured, okay, Phillip Rivers is going to have his run at it, and San Diego came back and beat him.
So this probably should be a shootout.
You never know. I mean, I hope it's not. I like when we run the ball and control the clock. I think that's our formula for success with Maurice and you know, David being efficient. But I'd like to keep it down. I think when we keep games down, I like our chances. But you never know.
Do you think your defensive backs are playing well enough at this point to be able to hold up against this pass offense? And this is a prolific bunch here.
Well, if you remember last year here, I was thinking back today, I was talking to Gene about this, or Jack or somebody. Rasheen was out, I believe, last year when we played them here, and they put Derek on Andre Johnson most of the game.
He didn't catch anything.
Late, he caught a few balls. But I thought Derek, other than the Cowboys game last week, I thought Derek Cox was sensational last year here against them. So with Rasheen and Derek healthy, and again, Don, you know, Carey's going to be okay. He just had that little helmet-to-helmet deal, and Courtney Green. I think we'll play good. Can we slow them down? I don't think you stop them. I think their offense is too good, but you hope to slow them down and obviously in the end outscore them.
Yeah, if David has any kind of a day like he did against Dallas, that's fantastic because they're off. I mean, they're ranked 32nd pass defense.
Yeah, defensively, they have many problems, and they are great. They are ranked dead last in the league defensively, although they're pretty good against the run, 11th against the run. But I think that might be a product of being dead last in the league against the pass. Why would anybody bother running the ball against them when you can throw it? But that doesn't play to the Jaguars' strength,
no.
Does it?
No. No, I think when we come out and run the ball, sustain the run with Maurice and play action pass with David, that's when we're the most successful. You come out and throw it all over the lot. That's, since I've been here, that's never been the footprint for our success.
Is 11th against the run indicative of their run defense, or is that a product of being last in the league against the pass?
You know, I don't know. They've in the past getting their back half, their safeties. I remember Dante Robinson was there. He was a good corner for them. But they've always been strong up front. You know, they've had Williams and they've had Cushing and they've had D'Amico Ryans. I think their front seven is where a lot of their talent was, other than Robinson. But I haven't watched a lot of film on them. I'm out in the field watching college football players, so I don't want to talk, you know, out of school here. But, you know, this is going to be a division game. Both teams 4-4. Both teams fighting for their playoff lives. And hope it's not too early to say that, but I don't think it is. And I think it's going to be a good football game.
When we come back for the second half hour of the show, I want to go to this big issue of player safety and, you know, protecting the players and protecting the integrity of the game. I got to tell you, folks, my inbox today was absolutely explosive, loaded with email from fans who don't like the direction the game is going. They don't like this crackdown. They don't like the fact that they think the game is turning into push and shove. So I'm going to talk to Terry about that when we come back, and of course we'll always invite your comments.
Season ticket holders, use your Jaguars rewards card. When you purchase at least 10 gallons of gate gasoline, you get $2 in Jagbucks. For details, go to Jaguars.com and also check out the Fan Zone section of Jaguars.com to see how you can win Jaguars tickets and some great Jaguars merchandise. Just look for the list of participating Parts House Car Care Centers, The Parts House, official sponsor of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Jaguars Monday rolls on. News is next, right here on News Talk Radio, WOKV. All right, gang, did you know that when the Jaguars win, we all win at Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue? You get a free barbecue pork sandwich with your game day ticket stub on Monday or Tuesday after a winning game. That's at all participating Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue restaurants. Welcome back to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Gene's off tonight, so is Cole Pepper, but we have the Jaguars Director of Player Personnel, Terry McDonough, and, of course, Mr. Excitement himself, Vic Ketchum.
Well, thank you, Joe. Your Eagles did the Jaguars a big favor yesterday. And you know,
they do what they can.
That game, the Colts and Eagles game yesterday, stirred something in NFL fans across the country.
You're talking about the Manning hit?
Oh, I'm talking about so many things in the game. Obviously, the great anxiety, the great fear for Austin Colley's safety as he lie on the ground. You know, the nation's heart, collectively, the nation's heart was in its throat. I could feel it in myself, a great concern that this kid was not going to get up, you know, and I don't mean right then, I mean ever. There was a worry. You could see it, you could feel it. It came through the TV.
There was something different with that. I noticed he wasn't even able to give that little thumbs up.
He was out.
They had his arms. I mean, his arms and hands.
Well, I mean, they
down.
Do that. They do that when you have the threat of a neck injury. But he didn't move. He was out. I mean, this guy was just out. The eyes were open, but nobody was home. All right, and it's a tough game for tough guys, obviously. But when they show the replay, it's the classic Willis McGahee play from the 2008 season AFC title game, where he caught the ball, took two steps, established himself as a runner, and then, you know, took that fierce hit from Ryan Clark. It was completely legal, and he fumbled, of course, and the Steelers recovered. You don't like to see it, but it's part of the game. I think everybody accepts that.
And that should have been a fumble.
The play with Austin Colley, Phil Simms described it perfectly. In slow motion, they showed the catch. They showed the two steps. They showed that he had established himself as a runner, and that really he ducked his head into the contact as opposed to the defender launching himself into his head. A penalty was called. A penalty shouldn't have been called. Then, of course, there was the one late in the game where on a fourth down play Manning was sacked. And the ball came out. The Eagles recovered. Game over. Oh, no, 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 no. We've got a flag here after, you know, not after further review, but the officials decided that the game is not over. We will put the ball goal to go, so to speak. We'll put the ball point blank, first and goal. The game is still on. And after the Colts scored right there, frankly, I expected them, because they were only down 2 points and they got the ball back with 50 seconds to go. I expected them to win. And I hold Peyton Manning responsible for not getting it done. He threw an interception to end the game. I thought he had plenty of time to move his team down for at least a field goal attempt. Now, early in that game, Michael Vick was run out of bounds, tackled out of bounds, and pushed through the first down stick. No penalty. Are there separate rules for Peyton Manning and other quarterbacks?
Well, I think from watching all the games on TV and on film and things like that, that, you know, you can see the superstar quarterbacks. I mean, they make sure if you're a, quote, athletic running quarterback and you use your feet a lot, I think the rules are a little different than if you're a franchise pocket passer.
Should they be different?
No. Should be the same for everybody.
I mean, Michael Vick is a quarterback. He's a starting quarterback. He's, by the way, I think he is either number one or number two in the league.
Hasn't it always been that way, though?
Well, you know, our quarterback, David. I mean, David's a big, strong, tough guy. He takes a lot of shots. And a lot of times he gets hit after the whistle and you say, okay, where's the flag? And it doesn't come.
Michael Vick leads the league, ladies and gentlemen, with a 105.3 passer rating. Seven touchdown passes, no interceptions. He is he's one of three quarterbacks in the league. The other two are Vince Young and Philip Rivers with passer ratings 100 or above. Here's a guy that leads the league in passer rating, and he's not being protected with as aggressively by the officials. There's no doubt in my mind if Peyton Manning was shoved through a first down marker out of bounds, 3 yards out of bounds, every flag in the building would have flown.
Or Tom Brady, or Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Again, I was listening to the Eagles broadcast on radio driving home on Sirius, and both those calls, the Austin Colley call, and I didn't see Cole hit him on the head. I just heard it, and they were going crazy. He must have just touched his head. Now, if you touch your head, it's a penalty. But was there impact? I mean,
no. He was coming around. Cole was coming around the back of him, trying to knock the ball out of Manning's hand, and as he was moving his hand around, it brushed the helmet.
And they called that.
And they called it.
Would they have called it had it been Michael Vick's head? That's my question, you see. And that's – today I have some very, very large concerns about the integrity of the game. Now, I see the effort to protect the player safety, but I don't see the – I'm not seeing the effort right now to protect the integrity of the game. And you know, I do a commentary on the All Access show that Brian and Jeff do on TV that's going to be airing in about 20 minutes.
Correct.
And I'll give you a little heads up or scoop or whatever. I'll tell you that's what my commentary is about tonight. The popularity of professional football is built on contact. It's built on hard hitting. It's built on tough play. It is not built on two-hand tag. It is not built on push and shove. It is built on block and tackle. And I'm very concerned. And, you know, tonight James Harrison is going to be on Monday Night Football. I got to believe he's going to get at least three flags. I mean, with this thing being as super sensitive as it is today after the Eagles-Colts game. And, again, folks, I'm telling you, my inbox today was a firestorm. I mean, it was just pow, 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 pow. I mean, it was exploding with angry fans, people who were saying, I don't want to watch this anymore. If this is the way it's going to be, I don't want to watch it anymore. You know, and they said last week that the president has to hear the message of the voters. And I'm telling you, it's time for Roger Goodell and the league to start listening to the message of the fans in this league, because the fans are sending a message, and the message they're sending is they don't want to see the game go soft. Your thoughts, Terry?
I think it's a hot button topic with all the head injuries, and you know, I think it started a couple of years ago with all the dementia with the older players, and then the quarterbacks and the concussions, and you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s, when you got your quote bell rung, you came back in the game later. Now it's you're out for the next week. We've come a long way with so much in this game. I look, again, I'm not an expert on the matter. I'm a football scout. But I think they have to do a lot with the helmet. You see a lot of technological advances with the helmet, and that's where they need to start. I mean,
such as? Well, what do they need to do with the helmet?
Well,
I'll tell you what I think.
I mean, since the last 25 years, I mean, where have the advances been with the helmet? I mean, they're finally now starting to get the bigger helmets, the more protected helmets.
So you want more protection? You want a bigger helmet?
I think you need to protect, yes. I think, you know, I don't know about a bigger helmet.
See, your dad, if your dad was alive, uh-huh. What your dad would say is he would refer you to boxing.
Okay.
The more you pad that hand, the bigger the glove, the more ounces that glove has, the more that hand can hit without getting sore, and that's when you get the head injuries. And in my opinion, what they need to do is start taking off, start decreasing the size of the helmet, and for God's sakes, get rid of the face mask. Start cutting back the face mask. I looked at one face mask today. It has 5 bars and 12 crossbars on it and a visor. I mean, why not just put a cement block on the guy's head?
But the problem you have nowadays, you know, back when my father, when my dad was little and you know, look at how big were the men back
then.
Watch
yourself.
No, I didn't say it. I didn't say it. But think about it. Think about the size of the guys nowadays.
Yeah, I understand that.
I mean,
Terry,
they're enormous.
I understand that. But I don't care how big they are. If their face is exposed, they're not going to lead with the head.
But you know and I know that's never going to happen. So the other side of the coin is you got to really come up with bigger, better. Well, they don't have to be bigger, just better helmets. I think that's what that's the direction they're going in. Because they're not going to take the face mask off. They're not going to limit the bars.
You can decrease the face mask. You can decrease the size. You can have limits.
Do you really think they'll ever do that?
I think if they're smart, they'll do that. And if they don't do that, this problem is going to get... It's not that the problem is going to get worse for player safety. It's that the problem is going to get worse for the game. The charm of football always has been and always will be hitting. And I think we've lost sight of a famous Vince Lombardi quote. And the quote is, football is first and foremost a running game. We've turned it into first and foremost now a passing game, and there are too many open spaces, high-speed collisions. We need to play the game in closer quarters.
Well, yeah, and you can do that a lot, especially if they let the defensive backs play more.
Bingo, more bump and run. Get back to bump and run.
I mean, that'll protect people a lot more. But the bottom line is this. The guys are bigger, stronger, faster. The headgear, I mean, what's going to happen is this, and I know you might have to go to break, is you're going to see a safety in this league, whether it's the playoffs coming up, stop. And the receiver's going to catch it and run for a touchdown. That's what it's going to come to.
And then it'll be cut.
Or they're going to lose a game because the guy's afraid to hit the receiver. I mean, that happened a couple of years ago. And who was it? It was one of the San Francisco's rushers. They stopped short. And
yes. It was a Giants guy who let up on a 49ers.
Yeah, the kid from B.C., Kiwanuka.
Yes.
Just stopped.
Let's get our last break in.
Okay. All right, gang, you can vote for your favorite MVP teacher to be the Community First Credit Union MVP Teacher of the Week. Your teacher could win club seats to a Jaguars home game. That's all part of First Down Touchdown for Teachers. Visit communityfirstfl.org for the details. You can stay with us right here on News Talk Radio WOKV. Jaguars Monday continues right after this. Welcome back to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Gene's off tonight. We've got the Director of Player Personnel, Terry McDonough, in with Vic Ketchman. Of course, this Sunday, Jaguars, Texans. 3 hours prior to every Jaguars home game, check out Teal Town. Live bands, a huge LED screen, interactive games, football drills, specially discounted concessions, including $2 draft beers. I got your attention now, don't I? Admission is free, no game ticket required, so come on by, have a good time. Teal Town, just south of the Pepsi Plaza, right here at Everbank Field. Victor?
Okay, here's a question from a fan, a Facebook question. Terry, do you guys have any interest in Al Harris?
That would be a question for Gene. I don't want to speak
you're
for Gene.
You're Gene tonight. You're Gene.
You know, he's. I'll say this. I think
is Gene, that why Gene isn't here?
No, he's working. He's working on some other things, and there might be some other things that the fans will see over the next couple of days. But that I don't believe that's one of them.
Okay, we're in the last 5 minutes of the show, and I like to finish up with some college talk. I mean, you guys are college scouts, so tell our listeners, Terry, what's the college crop look like? What are you seeing out there on the road?
Well, you know, you can never tell. This isn't the deepest senior class I've ever seen from a lot of positions. It'll be interesting to see when the underclassmen do declare. I think there's a lot of them. You never know who they might be, how many are going to come out. But as far as a senior class this year, it's not the strongest class I've ever seen. Now, obviously, depending upon what quarterbacks declare, there's a lot of quarterbacks out there, a lot of numbers compared to a year ago where there might have been, you know, 5 or 6 guys.
Is it still a good quarterback crop?
Very. And again, it all depends upon what juniors declare. At the least, it'll be good. It could be very good, and it could be great, depending upon what juniors
declare. Yeah, we had a guy, for instance, like Case Keenum, leave the radar because he had the season-ending injury early in the year. So all of a sudden, you know, we don't include Case Keenum in the class, but Case Keenum is still very much a part of the quarterback class, is he not?
Yeah, and then you have other guys that have emerged as seniors,
such as
Stansy from Iowa.
Oh, yeah, for, no question.
I mean, he was a guy we probably wouldn't have talked about a year ago. Now, all of a sudden, he's, I think as of last week, 19 touchdowns, two interceptions, outstanding year.
How about T.J. Yates from North Carolina, senior, right?
Yeah, he's winning a lot of games. T.J.'s put himself on the radar. He was not even thought of last year.
He had a big game on Saturday against Florida State, did he not?
He's quietly had a nice season. And again, a year ago, we wouldn't have talked about him. Kaepernick from Nevada, mm-hmm. out west, so a lot of people around here might. He's a big, strong-arm kid that Nevada's won a lot of football games this year.
Now he runs, too.
He's a big, strong-arm runner and a passer. He's 6'4". Mm-hmm. And again, he's on the West Coast, so a lot of people around here might not be familiar with that name. But there's a lot of quarterbacks, a lot of numbers, so it'll be a little more interesting this year than it was a year ago.
Are there any other positions where the draft looks like it might be deep?
Again, all depending upon what I talked about earlier. I'd say deep, mm-hmm. no. Now, again, in January, I can better answer that because you'll see a flood of guys. But right now, I'd say, you know, there's some decent numbers at cornerback. But all in all, again, there's a lot of receivers. The kid at Georgia was having a fantastic year. You know, he's an underclassman.
A.J. Green.
Yeah, and then I watched a kid the other night who was also an underclassman. But we were just talking in general here. The kid from South Carolina, number one, I don't even know his name. But, boy, was he outstanding.
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
There's a lot of big, fast receivers. The kid up at Pittsburgh, there's a lot of young kids. So it'll be interesting.
Jonathan Baldwin. Yeah. He's a kid at Pitt.
And there's others. I mean, you're seeing a lot of these 6'4", 6'5", guys that can run. Mm-hmm. So it'll be an interesting year there. But right now, it's too early to tell.
How far off is this team? Assuming that this is not – Assuming that this team has another level of talent to achieve to get to where it wants to become a true blue playoff contender, is it a level that can be reached with one more draft, two more drafts?
Oh,
Give
yeah.
me your thoughts on that.
I do. I said 2 years ago when we started this thing, when Gene took over, I said it's going to take 4 years because mm-hmm. I told you then it was a complete rebuild job, and it was.
Mm-hmm.
The talent that we've added here the last couple of years, the type of people we've added, how they're playing, I'm really excited about the direction this thing's headed. I'm not just saying that because I'm in this chair. I mean, the guys have been what we thought they were going to be. We haven't had a lot of surprises. Great character guys, a lot of young talent, one of the youngest teams in the league. The young guys playing hard, they're good kids. So it's just we hope to continue doing what we've done the last couple of years, and it gives us a lot of reason, a lot of optimism around here.
How's Eugene Moreau playing?
He's playing well. He's had a fantastic season. I think he stumbled a little bit against, was it Philly?
Yes, Trent Cole had a
But he's really played well. A lot of the young kids are playing with Knighton and Alualu and Cox and Thomas, and you can go on and on and on. I'm sure I'm leaving some guys out. But
who's the best defensive line draft in the league this year?
Best defensive line draft?
Yeah, best defensive lineman to have been drafted.
Oh, I'd have to say, as much as I love Tyson, he's been everything we thought he was going to be. I think Sue has just dominated mm-hmm. for Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does he have for defensive tackle, Joe? 6.5 sacks?
And he could kick.
Well, if he could, they might have beat the Jets.
Okay.
I think he missed that extra point, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Terry,
he hit,
thanks.
He doinked it.
Thanks so much.
It's always good to be here. Thanks, Vic. Thanks, Joe.
All right, that's Jaguars Monday. Don't forget that tomorrow night right here on WOKV, we've got the Jack Del Rio Show, Brian Sexton and Jack Del Rio sit down. Of course, Vic will be back on Wednesday for Jaguars This Week along with Brian and Jeff Lagerman. Once again, Terry McDonough, solid as usual. Victor, have a good night. Good night, everybody.